Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Welcome to the Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. Kind of a rainy, chilly last day of July as we record this. I had to put on a jacket this morning when I walked the dogs in the rain. There's your weather report from a place you were at a time that's long past. So that's kind of weird. With me today is Josie Schneider. How you doing, Josie?
I'm great. It is rainy and cold here in Kansas City, too.
Great. I'm glad I'm not rainy and cold alone. Not in studio with me, in the dining room below me and to the left, my wife, Tasha Johnson, on her iPad.
Aloha.
And we are back. Lisa Murphy is still on vacation, trouncing across Europe, taking pictures of herself on playground equipment and with food, I imagine. We think she's going to come back to the podcast. That was the plan. Haven't heard from – this is the longest I've gone without hearing from Lisa. I think she's ghosting me, people. I think Lisa has –
Are you having Lisa withdrawal?
And no, I'm okay. Lisa really needed an opportunity to recharge. I think the last couple of years, the only vacations she's taken have been like going to a conference someplace related. And so this is totally goofing off time. So I hope she comes back refreshed and energized. Josie, librarian, mom, former childcare professional, still kind of early learning professional, has a rant. What do you want to complain about, Josie?
I want to complain about reading levels and policing what children read to the point where reading is no fun at all.
Well, look, if they're not staying on level, how are we going to rate them and judge them and manage them?
Oh, that does make it tricky, doesn't it? And before we get into this rant, I should also say that I was a fifth grade teacher for several years as well. So,
well, you're much younger than me, but you've done a lot more. I applaud it.
I understand this argument from the teaching perspective. I get it. There's a time and a place for it. And yet we are killing children's love of reading. Mm-hmm. I wish I had it pulled up. I'll try to find the link for Jeff later. But Scholastic does a survey every few years that kind of rates, it questions children's how they read, what they read, do they enjoy reading, things like that. And you'll find that every year for the past 10 or so years, stats show that children's love of reading plummets when they hit age 9 and 10. And it's really interesting from a classroom perspective to think about, well, what's happening at that age. That's going from about third to fourth grade. Mm-hmm. People talk about the first, you know, early childhood, you're learning to read. And then in the upper elementary grades and then on to middle school and high school, you're reading to learn. So, you know, you're learning how to read, you're reading the fun stuff that you enjoy. Well, what happens around third, fourth grade? Well, then you're having to read textbooks. And with so much emphasis on STEM now and whatever your fancy state test is called, you're having to really read a lot of boring nonfiction text. And that's not saying that all nonfiction is boring. There's some great nonfiction books for kids. But you're reading a lot of text that you just really don't care about and learning how to pull information from them. So you're learning how to dissect the text, which is really not as fun as picking up a story about something you love and just
reading
in it.
Yeah. Can we pause here for a minute and talk about textbooks? When you spend a lot more time around text, when was the last time you picked up a textbook that you were really excited to dig into?
I'm not a good example because I'm a nerdy Ravenclaw. I always kind of like textbooks.
Find them enjoyable?
Okay, let me rephrase that. I'm thinking about books relating to early literacy and childcare and things like that that I have an interest in. But like a general history textbook, no, those were awful.
They are horrible. They are poorly written. They are put together by a committee I get scolded for being so judgy and so biased, but they are put together by committees of dyslexic chimps, and then typed up by I don't know, hyperactive mongooses, and then thrown in front of kids, and they're so scripted. Teachers having their own opinions and their own spin on things, and their own knowledge has been taken out of the equation, and so there's a lot of a texted script. I mean, or actual scripts for the teachers dealing with these textbooks, and it's a bunch of bullshit. If you want to learn history, or you want to learn about art, or you want to learn about poetry, go to original sources instead of the BS goddamn textbooks. Bit of a ramp. Jeff steps off soapbox.
Well, I'm hopping on it for you because the other problem with textbooks is they're written in a way to try not to offend anybody, which means they're very bland. They don't always tell how actual historical events happened, and they still offend every side regardless.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They're horrible, and you shouldn't subject your children to them. Moving on.
So anyway, statistics show that children's love of reading plummets because reading changes at that age. And so then we get into reading levels and making sure that every child is reading on grade level down to the month if you're doing AR testing. I'm pretty sure it's AR, accelerated reading. They'll say you're a 3.6, which means you are reading where a third grader should be during the 6 month of school. Mm-hmm. And kids, you know, have to find books that fit their AR level, and they read the book, they take a test over it, blah, 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 blah. I'm not saying that there's never a time to find a book on a child's level. If they're really struggling with reading and you want to help them learn to read, there can be a time during the school day where, yes, you find a book that fits them best and you work with them one-on-one to help them get better. Mm-hmm. However, it breaks my heart when that is the only type of book that child is allowed to read. So the other day, here's my rant.
Oh, now the rant's going to get started. Okay. Here it goes.
The other day, Juliet's at camp. I'm just hanging out, walking around Barnes & Noble. And I'm just in the children's section to see what they have out that's new. And there's this little boy that found a book, and he was so excited. And he takes it up to his mom, and I don't know what the book was, but he said, "This is it. This is the one I want." And she says, is it a third grade level? And she flips through it. She looks at it. And a lot of these books will have symbols on the back, which has their reading level. Oh no, this is only a second grade level. It's too easy for you.
Oh.
And he had to go put it up.
Now.
And that kills me.
poor kid. Also, if you are in a bookstore and you come across a book that has the little grade level on it, it's probably not a very well written book. I mean, really, are the things that are really original books, and are they starting to put that stuff on those books?
They will
too?
Put them if they're by Scholastic or some of the major publishers. That even a nice chapter book will have that on the back. I'm not talking about like the guided reading ones that say.
Okay.
Trade, so level one, whatever.
So that bullshit has even seeped onto the good books.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's kind of sad because it used to be an indicator of this is a book written by a committee or a copywriter who, and I mean, those things just didn't used to have any personality. And if they're putting those on the beautifully illustrated, well-written books now, that kind of is a little bit more heartbreaking for me.
Well, yeah, because kids want to know if they can take an AR test on it, because they're not going to read it if they can't take a test on it, because then they can't get their points and earn their prizes. So,
Did you go over and...
Did you buy the book and then sneak it off to the kid?
No.
Here. Or say to the mom, why didn't you buy two books? You know,
did
let
you,
him have this
did you quickly
one
put
that
your hair
he
up
really
in a
wants.
Bun? Did you quickly put your hair up in a bun and walk over to the mom and flash your librarian ID and say, I'm a librarian?
No, I minded my own business and continued on my way because I didn't feel like getting punched.
That sounds like a good idea.
Now, it is. Now, let me tell you, it is harder because I hear these same conversations daily at the library. Mm-hmm. And I have to be very careful of remembering that I'm not the grown-up. I'm not that child's grown up.
You're not their grown up.
Mm-hmm. I'm not that child's grown up, and I don't get to make the decisions for them. If I hear that going on, I will often kind of sneak my way over and say, oh, can I help you find something? And I'll look at the book that the kid's wanting to read and see if I can find something similar that
that's nice of you.
A little bit better. But It is hard when I find myself in those situations because ultimately it is not my decision. But please.
You ever do the thing like, that's rated as a second grade, but that's a misprint. They reassessed it, and that's really a third grade book. So it's okay to read. I'll write a letter of reference if you need one for this, where the teacher's like your credit for it. You try to pull some of that bullshit?
No, but now maybe I will
make a note of it.
I just
you let them read the stuff that they care about, and the way you find out what that is you surround them with lots of options. I mean,
yes,
right?
Yes. The more, I mean, you can find, if you are dead set on finding a book for a certain level because the teacher requires it, and I fully accept that is the case. You can still find something the child is interested in. What concerns me is when you don't care about the topic, you just care about the number on that book.
Yeah.
Because those kids that are forced to read that, they're not going to grow up and continue to read as an adult.
Yeah, they're not going to find any pleasure or any joy in it. And it's
when they're preschoolers, we sit there and we say, books are magical, and they can be, and they are, and they're fun. And then we turn it into a chore.
Yeah. Well, Josie, what I would like to do is both you and Tasha have some book recommendations, some book ideas. I would like to take a look at those for the remainder of this episode. And then if you have time, I'd like to come back with a episode on this. I'm kind of maybe surprising you with this one, but an episode on how to raise a reader.
Okay.
And tips for parents, because I've got some thoughts on that too. That work?
Yeah.
Okay. So, what books do we like? I mean, you've got a bunch of them on the Playvolution HQ site now, but what are some favorites that you'd like to recommend to people right now?
Oh gosh, if you want a good classroom read, or if you're reading with your own children, every child's favorite from the past 2 or 3 years has been The Book with No Pictures by BJ Novak. Are you familiar with that one?
No.
No.
I don't have any children.
Or the older ones, yeah.
Okay. It is BJ Novak, yes, of The Office or whatever show he was on, wrote this book, and it is hysterical. It is indeed a book with no pictures. Uh-huh. And the whole premise of the book is, you know, it tries to trick the grown-up into saying silly things, because it says the rule of a book is if it's on the page, you have to read it. Mm-hmm. So it's got the robot saying nonsense words and talking like a monkey and talking like a robot. And at one point you have to say boo-boo butt, and that is the funniest phrase that has ever been uttered, according to every four-year-old I've met.
I'm on board. Any book that's got butt in it, I think, is a good yes. book. And boo-boo butt sounds delightful.
So it is a really fun read. That, like I said, that, oh God, I stopped counting how many times I read that book.
So no illustrations at all?
No illustrations at all. It has no pictures.
That's great, because, I mean, that's just a chance for them to play with imagining what a boo-boo butt looks like. I've got some thoughts, but I'm not going to share them here. No, I like those. And actually, recently, my exposure to new children's books are the ones that you send me to put on the site. So I've really enjoyed that experience. Tasha, you got one?
Well, going along with the butt theme, I guess we have started here at the moment. We were in Australia and we went to bookstores because, you know, it's a bookstore and we're in Australia, and Busting by Aaron, Blabey, is about a creature who needs to use the loo, and there's a line and they tell him, no, you can't budge. And so he goes on to like a little adventure trying to find a place to go. And
he's like a little wombat, isn't he?
He looks like he could be
hold
a
up
wombat.
The cover. Nobody else can see it but Josie, but hold up.
But
the
Josie, Bustin'.
Oh, cute.
It's hilarious. Yeah, he tries to go behind some bamboo and causes a hubbubaloo. And then he goes to the zoo and gets kung fu'd by a kangaroo. And then tries an empty shoe, a canoe, hearty stew, and then he finds a loo that's available, and he takes a great big steaming wee at the end. So, not what you're thinking is going to happen, but it just flows along, and I read it to our granddaughter, and it's hilarious, and that was her go-to book for me to read to her. Read it again!
For our American listeners, yes, a loo is a bathroom.
A toilet.
Yeah.
Restroom.
Slinky the cancer dog is behind me growling at something off the window. He's protecting us from a bird or something, if you're hearing any growling in the background. One of my favorites, and I don't have a copy of it, and I can't remember any of the words, was I can't remember the name of it anymore either. Okay, well, I guess we
moving on.
You know, that cricket one.
Oh, Nicholas Cricket.
Yeah, Nicholas Cricket.
Cricket.
You ever heard of Nicholas Cricket, Josie?
Uh-uh.
Oh, you should check out Nicholas Cricket. It's probably from about the time you were born. Nicholas Cricket, he's like, it's like these illustrations are like 1920s Art Nouveau looking pictures. And Nicholas Cricket played in the Bugawug Cricket Band. Mm-hmm. And so the text is beautiful and the illustrations are delightful. So Nicholas Cricket was one of my favorites to read to the kids.
Check that out.
Yes, it's by Joyce Maxner.
It's a good old school.
It is.
Old school book.
Originally published in 1989. So you would have been two when it came out.
So maybe I have heard it and I just
don't remember it. Let's do another round and then we'll wrap this episode up. What's one more you'd recommend, Josie?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. Okay, let's see. This one is a book. It came out a year or two ago. It's called They All Saw a Cat by Brendan Wenzel, W-E-N-Z-E-L. And this might have won some awards for its illustrations. I'm not sure. It has very simple text, which, you know, predictive text is great because it gives them the chance to read it along with you. Mm-hmm. They think they're reading. They're really excited because they are.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they don't actually know what the words say, they get into the rhythm. But what's so cool about this cat is the cat is walking through the world and seeing different animals, and the animals are seeing the cat. And on each page, the cat looks different based on what creature is seeing the cat. So when the child sees the cat has big, sweet features. It looks very friendly. When the mouse sees the cat, it looks like a terrible monster. Mm-hmm. When the worm feels the cat, the worm that's underground feels the cat, the illustration is the worm underground, and it's like the vibrations make the outline of the cat.
Cool.
So the illustrations in this book are so cool, and it's a really great time. I mean, that's a great book for discussions, because the kids talk about, why does it look like that? You talk about different perspectives, and the story is really simple, but you can have a lot of conversations about it.
Oh, definitely.
I like the difference in the illustrations. That sounds like that fun. And I mean, that's something that sparks conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talking about
mm-hmm. Seeing it from somebody else's perspective, which I think is great for anybody to have that idea or that lookout.
Yeah. Cause we always have a conversation at the end. Well, so what does the cat really look like? And I mean, what's the answer?
Yeah. All of those things. Yeah. Do you have another one you want to do, Tasha?
I'm going to go with Building a House by Byron Barton. This one. I showed it to Josie. Now the rest of you can see it. But it's just a simple, great little picture book with simple text. It's on a green hill. A machine digs a big hole. Builders hammer and saw. And it goes all the way through to the end when the house is built and the family moves inside. And the kids would just, they would read it with me after a while. But then you could start mixing it up and say the plumber puts in pipes, says pour water, but I'd say pour Jell-O. And the kids would just think it was hilarious going, no, you don't put Jell-O in it or something else. Or you would say instead of a green hill, I'd say a purple hill. And they would go, no, that's not right either. So it's just a simple
very simple, and very simple illustrations too, but the kids loved it. And I mean, it doesn't have any computers in it or glitter on the pages, so it's probably a little bit too old school for
And this is the newer kids. One I had to buy a new one because it fell apart, and I taped together so much that it wouldn't even hold together anymore. So it's from when our kids were little, and just having the older kids read it to the younger kids too, it was just a nice little read.
Yeah, it's one of those that they would like memorize. And then, I mean, for some of the kids through the family child care program, it was like the first book they read because they memorized it. And then that was their thing. Mm-hmm.
But I think you brought up a really good point that we shouldn't discount some of those older books that people don't read anymore just because they're not hipster books like Jeff.
They're not written by the guy from The Office.
Yeah, they're not written by the guy from The Office. They don't have their hipster illustrations. They don't go to the organic market like my favorite Wolfie the Bunny. Those are good books. And those classic books that everyone knows about are classic for a reason. Mm-hmm. So don't forget about them when you're choosing what to read to your group.
Yeah. So my last one is Possum Come a Knockin'. You know Possum Come a Knockin'? I love Possum Come a Knockin' because both the illustrations are amazing, and it is damn hard to read when you're trying to read it out loud to kids for the first 50 or 60 times. But then when you get into the rhythm of it, it's a real joy. Possum Come a Knockin' at the door, Possum Come a Knockin' at the door, and it goes on and it's just fun with this possum is kind of mischievous, kind of a trickster character, prank knocking this family of how would you describe the family? I think hillbillies is derogatory.
I was going to say redneck, but that's not appropriate either.
Rural?
I think
rural.
All of those are derogatory.
I grew up in Peculiar, Missouri, so I can say.
So, I mean, this is the book is Josie's Family. no, I mean, it's Beverly Hillbilly-esque would be how you describe the family, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
I mean, the daughter kind of looks like Mary. What was her name? Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh, now I got Gilligan Jethro. Island.
There's Pa. There's Granny. There's Jethro, and there's what's her name?
I.
Oh, Josie, you've never watched the Beverly Hillbillies, have you?
I have, but I'm
Googling. Hang on.
Care of the animals. There's listeners that are yelling at us. And there's also listeners saying, Jeff, end the show. Mary Ellen, not Mary Ellen.
Ellie Mae.
Ellie Mae.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
there Ellie we go. Wow. Okay, now I'll be able to sleep at night. Hey, listeners, there's some. There's six good book ideas if you're looking for some new good books to add to your early learning advice. Yes?
Can I just give you two more authors to check out?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll keep it short and sweet.
Go ahead.
Anything by Mo Willems is wonderful, hilarious. Kids love him.
Okay.
And then if you've got toddlers, Sandra Boynton. She's oldie, but a goodie. Her books are timeless, and little people love them so much.
Yeah, yeah. They're so lyrical, mm-hmm. and the illustrations are real simple, but, I mean, there's...
Barnyard dance.
They're deceptively simple because there's little things hidden in the illustrations and they're just delightful, I guess is how I should describe them. Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of them have songs that go along with them.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very lyrical and fun to read. And again, that lyricalness of them, that kind of makes them easier for kids to memorize too, mm-hmm. because you get that kind of bounciness in your voice. And so there's a lot of good going on there. If you want more, go to playvolutionhq.com/books. And there's a bunch of kids' book recommendations there. Most of them suggested by Josie, our in-house librarian. Josie's going to be back with us in the next episode, and we are going to talk about how to raise a reader. I hope Josie has some thoughts, because otherwise it's going to be a really boring episode. Thanks for listening. Back soon with another episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.